following program is a peer-to-peer advice show and does not diagnose mental health conditions. If you're seeking social services, please call or text 211 or go to 211.ca. Hello, listeners around the world on radio streaming and podcast services. This is It's Not Therapy. I'm Leanna Kersner, and I am not a therapist, but I am your source for navigating the madness of mental health using my top 10 sayings for checking in with your best self. This week, we're talking about mental health and consent. You're going to hear less from me than usual because I have two guests this episode. Poppy, not a real name, who is a therapist, unlike me, who is not a therapist, and Poppy's fiance, Zena, both of whom have mental and physical health conditions that can and have impacted their ability to consent to major things like sexual encounters. What you're going to hear this episode is harrowing and complicated, which is why they're perfect guests for this issue, which is harrowing and complicated. Statistically, we know that people with mental health conditions are more likely to be the victims of crime than the perpetrators, but we only have glimpses into how much more likely. According to one study I found, 40% of the women surveyed with mental health conditions had been victims of sexual assault. The control group, women surveyed without a diagnosis, 7%. That's a huge gap. Consent from a legal perspective and consent from a social and mental health perspective are very different things. Plenty of legal activities still violate consent. And because of the culture war surrounding sex education in schools, many people aren't taught the basics of consent at home or at school. And because of the misappropriation of mental health language, even people who seem extremely knowledgeable get consent wrong. I had to do an emergency session over the weekend with a client because he was repeatedly exposed to sexual images without his consent. And when he complained about this, the people posting the images accused him of censorship and bigotry. It upset him so badly. He said, I quote, he wanted to walk into traffic. So what is consent? Consent must be mutual, which means everyone involved agrees to what's happening. Continuous, meaning you can be okay with it one minute and not okay with it the next, and that's valid. You can yeet out. Specific, saying yes to one thing does not mean yes to everything. That's tied into consent is stoppable. Again, anyone can change their minds at any time. No means no, stop means stop, cut it out means cut it out. And consent must be actively communicated. That means silence or a lack of resistance. That doesn't mean proceed. But that's not what we see in the media, right? On TV, in movies, two or more people see each other, breathe the same air, and the next thing we know, they're in bed together or some other location, having sex with greater or less degrees of dysfunction. We rarely see communicated specific consent in media. We see that implied consent where nobody says, is this okay? And nobody says yes. We see that as quote unquote more romantic. But some people even find talking about sex before they do it so that everybody knows what the other person will enjoy. They find that annoying. The word annoying, one of my least favorite words. What's more annoying? Having an adult conversation about sex? Because you're mature enough to have adult conversations if you're mature enough to have sex, right? Right? Or is it more annoying to have the consequences of skipping that step and accidentally violating someone's sexual or emotional boundaries? A lot of people have the crazy ex story, and some of them are legit. A lot of them are legit. But there's a reason I separate good crazy from bad crazy on this show. There's no such thing as too sensitive when it comes to sexual emotional consent. someone is not less enlightened because they don't want to perform a particular sex act. And it's never, ever okay to lie to someone to get them to consent or threaten to leave them if they don't. It's never okay to shame someone over their sexual preferences or even shame them because they said something hurt or went too far. And yet, these lawful but awful violations of boundaries happen all the time, even in enlightened left-wing communities. So, after the break, I'm going to introduce you to Poppy and Xena. Poppy is trans and Xena is non-binary, and they're engaged and polyamorous. And Poppy is a therapist who has experienced firsthand a situation where she wasn't capable of consenting temporarily, and someone who was given the opportunity to know better crossed lines. I'll let them tell their story after this. Questions, comments, concerns, Leanna@nottherapyshow.com, or just go to the website for our contact form, nottherapyshow.com, @nottherapyshow on X, that's Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. Be right back on this episode about mental health and consent. The following program is a peer-to-peer advice show and does not diagnose mental health conditions. If you're seeking social services, please call or text 211 or go to 211.ca. We're back on Insta Therapy. I'm still Leanna Kersner. I'm still not a therapist. We are still talking mental health, mental illness, and consent. And I have hyped these guests from the beginning of the show. I am super stoked. We've got Poppy and her fiance Xena on the show. Poppy is a therapist. She is a therapist. I am not a therapist. Poppy is a therapist. Xena is her fiance, and they are here to talk mental health and consent because both of them are consenting adults, but they also have various conditions that sometimes make consent challenging. Poppy, Xena, how would you describe your situations in that regard?
So, by the way, I'm Poppy, and I guess on my side of things, I would say that so as far as my diagnoses, I am diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, which is a disorder that deals with incredibly strong reactions to abandonment. It's usually characterized by potentials for self-harm and suicide, vague sense of self, a tendency towards black and white thinking. It can lead to things like paranoid ideations or dissociation. It can also lead to, you know, mood issues, things like that, emotional lability where emotions can change at the drop of a hat, sometimes for no reason. Love that. And so that can definitely affect how consent and how relationships function. Zizi, do you want to talk about kind of briefly just what you deal with?
Yeah. So I'm Xena, or Zizi for short, if you're Poppy. And I deal with PMDD, premenstrual dysphoria disorder. Basically, about a week before your period starts, your body cannot handle its own hormones and just goes nuts. And so it can look similar to BPD, frankly, but it's still its own thing. Long-lasting, really intense moods, and that could be happy moods, sad moods, angry moods. They all can be intense. One of the things that, you know, the community talks about is that don't make any big decisions during PMDD, because you never really know if afterwards how you're going to feel about something. And even just for the sake of, like, the best way to handle something is probably easier done outside of PMDD when your hormones are not freaking the fuck out. You know, and so you can get mood, cognitive changes, body changes, appetite changes, all of that with PMDD, and it just messes with everything. The other actually thing that we deal with that I don't think you and I even think about super hard anymore is migraines. In terms of consent, that's one that we've always had to be really careful with over the years, is just the chronic illness. When a migraine's coming on and you start feeling a little bit fuzzy brained or a little bit out of it, like, that's our cue to kind of start being careful with ourselves. Migraines change, like, all of your functioning ability.
And that's the challenge, right? It's being aware that sometimes it's not a good time to make decisions, but sometimes you're not always aware you're in that mode, especially in the early. I mean, I've got a friend, he's been on the show, who has BPD, and it's a challenge. And sometimes he's just not his best self. And, you know, he came and he said, sometimes the best place for me is hospitalization. He was very blunt about that. But that in-between phase where you might not catch it. I mean, you guys are probably both pros at this time. You know, I know you've warned me about the PMDD. It's like, it's coming on. I want to warn people, which I really appreciated, because in that case, you can contextualize it, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting that people, even people with a diagnosis themselves or who identify as mentally ill, don't necessarily get the impact on consent. And this is something, you know, disclaimer again, people with a diagnosis can consent when they are regulated. There are times, and this is what I want to get into, when everybody with I mean, I have PTS. I say, when I'm regulated, I have PTS. The PTSD is the problem. I can't make any decisions right now. This ain't good. What do you want people to know about consent with the various things? What to look for? What to do if you have a loved one or a friend with a condition like BPD, bipolar disorder is another one. Some of the other personality, hate personality disorder, but that's the term we're stuck with. What should people know about when consent can be given and when it can't be?
So again, I'm a big fan of the idea of like knowing is half the battle, like the old G.I. Joe thing. And so like, to me, it's like, well, if you have a partner, right? I'm not talking about like a random hookup or anything, but if you're talking about like a partner who is a regular partner, and they have confided in you, they have a diagnosis, I think it is on the responsibility of that partner to learn about that diagnosis and understand the ways that that can impact the relationship. And one of the ways that, you know, mental illness can impact a relationship is through consent. If someone is having a, you know, is schizophrenic and unregulated, their consent is basically nullified. Like, we don't know what's going on in their head. We don't know if they're going, through a full-blown, you know, hallucinogenic, you know, hallucination based episode. Like, we're there's not much to be done there. I've dealt with those folks in CMH before. In the case of like bipolar, if someone's in a manic episode, then like we have to consider the idea of, you know, are they just doing risk taking actions because they want to, or is this because this is part of the mania? And then we have to assess, you know, is this person actually making decisions for themselves? And sometimes we may have to make a decision for them. Because, you know, situations are not always clean. They're not always simple. Sometimes people don't understand why you're saying this or don't want to do these things. Borderline's a very complicated one for me because I have a particular story, which we can get into a little bit later, but I have a particular story around that where my diagnosis of borderline compromised my own consent, and I didn't really figure it out until... actually, I talked to you, Liana.
I opened my big fat mouth. Yeah.
Yeah. Well... And yeah, so I'll get into the story a little bit later, but the central diversion of it is that like realizing that just because an action feels off, but you can't put your finger on to why, doesn't mean you are granting consent. And especially in the hindsight, knowing that full situation, there were issues of duplicity. There were issues of the relationship in question, coercion. And I don't know if even if that coercion was intentional, I'll never know. But in this case, it was because the relationship was hanging on by a thread, and which means that a person with borderline, due to that fear of abandonment, will literally do anything to maintain that. So consent goes out the window, like just completely. So to me, it comes down to understand what your partner is dealing with and understand yourself too. Understand like what it is that you're dealing with and what you look like unregulated so you can make the best decisions possible.
I will absolutely suggest anyone that is in a relationship with somebody else who has borderline also get therapy for themselves. Like, you are going to be dealing with a new thing. And again, times where somebody is dealing with like very severe like attachment issues or having panic attacks or any of that kind of thing, and making sure that you are at a place that you can handle that stuff is really important. Making sure that you can navigate it and not get like sucked into whatever's going on. That's a big deal. On my end, even some of the building blocks is having people doing enough research to have a really good understanding of, okay, of things like what symptoms of like dissociation are, what symptoms of like a panic attack or a flashback are. And if your partner deals with this, making sure that you understand what it looks like in them. Because a lot of the times, you know, it's hard to know at first. And so you're going to start putting together all the little context clues until you finally have a big enough picture of, oh, that's what's going on right now. right? And sometimes it's hard to notice when somebody is in that state at first because they're not always giving a lot of outward signals, even if their internals are screaming. Mm-hmm. I'm one of those. My internals could be screaming and I could be panicked, but I will look calm on the outside and I don't even know how that works, but that's a thing that happens. And Poppy's like, but Zeta, I didn't notice, like you looked normal. And I'm like, oh, whoops, that was not what was going on inside.
Yeah, and I mean, consent as a culture, we are bad at. Our media is really toxic about it. A lot of people don't understand it. When you dive into the statistics on sexual assault, a lot of first-time offenders don't realize they're violating consent. They think they're being romantic.
Yep.
It's just an education thing. But with people with mental illness, the statistics are quite stark. One study said 40% of mentally ill women have at least one, you know, experience of sexual assault, as opposed to 7% of the control population. That's a shocking number.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you begin to let people know they're doing it right?
Yeah, it's one of those things where I don't even know there's necessarily a right. I just know when it's like
right.
wrong or when it's more into like the toxic spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think the big thing for me is that this stuff is always going to be very, you know, complicated and going to have a lot of different moving parts. And part of it is like, again, communication is really super important on these fronts. I think the thing for me is that how do you know you're doing it right? I think if both people are educated about the person's mental illness, that is, they've both done their due diligence to understand what's happening, what's going on. Like Zizi said, looking at some of the symptoms of that, such as a panic attack or things like that. Like, do you know what it looks like when your partner with BPD is splitting?
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with that? These are things that like Zena and I worked on very early into our relationship. We made like ID, you know, like little 3x5 cards that had like, these are interventions that work really well when I'm dealing with X.
Now, for people who don't know what is splitting?
So in the 9 criteria for borderline personality disorder, the second one is listed as a tendency to go to extremes, usually black and white thinking in the form of either idealization or devaluation. I don't like that language because it's a little obfuscating. I prefer the terms sort of, I would say probably infatuation and like demonization, because that's really what it comes up more as, is essentially think of it as any person you look at while in a split is going to probably ping one or two directions. They're either going to be perfect, in which case you don't notice their flaws, you minimize things about them that are issues or red flags.
Mm-hmm.
Get to that in a bit. And then if you're in a black split, which is what I call them, versus, you know, a white split versus mm-hmm. A black split tends to be you demonizing the other person. That is, there's no good to this person. This person is utterly irredeemable. And so the issue with splitting is that it tends to be cyclical. So a good example would be a problem that people with borderline can get into that I think is important for partners to know about is, so at the beginning of the cycle, someone can go into a white split, idealize and super love their partner, infatuate the whole 9 yards. And then they'll start doing things for them and they'll do things for them. And then what'll happen is eventually they'll start to feel resentful because they feel like they're being taken advantage of, or the other person doesn't tell them for the 80th time, attaboy or whatever it is. And what happens is they essentially then, the needle buries the other direction because now they don't feel like they're being loved, taken care of. They feel like the other person's disconnecting. And so what they end up doing is creating in some cases, a self-fulfilling prophecy where they become afraid that the other person's going to leave them because of that disconnection, the reason the needle dropped the other direction. And what happens is they go, well, they're going to leave me anyway, so I'm going to treat them like crap. And then what ends up happening is the other person eventually gets sick of their shit and leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So
hence the pattern of unstable relationships.
Correct.
Yeah.
For me, the big one is being, you know, learning, this took me a while, but learning how to avoid falling into black splits. White splits are still very difficult. Idealization is still something I struggle with, but like, watching for that black and white thinking, watching for the way that I think about or I interact with another person is incredibly important.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way I would describe splitting as a whole.
How do you go into it? That's got to be scary long term, never being sure if it really is, you know, the romance of the century or you're just white splitting.
Yeah, it's my own personal hell. I'll give you a good example. Like, so this kind of gets into the story I was going to bring up.
You know what? This is probably a good time to take a break before we get into the story of Doom. So hang on. Questions, comments, concerns for Poppy, Xena, or me, Leanna, at nottherapyshow.com. Nottherapyshow.com. Fill out the contact form on the website. Be back after this talking mental health, when someone can consent and when they can't on It's Not Therapy. The following program is a peer-to-peer advice show and does not diagnose mental health conditions. If you're seeking social services, please call or text 211 or go to 211.ca. We're back on It's Not Therapy. I'm still Leanna Kirstner. I'm still not a therapist. We're still in the interview and I'm still talking to Poppy, a legit therapist, unlike me, who is not a therapist, and her fiance, Xena. And I'm going to put a listener discretion advised on this part of the interview because we're going to talk about some stuff where consent was violated.
So when we talk about this, I come at it from sort of two angles. One is that there's myself as a clinician who's trained in dealing with trauma, with personality disorders, ADHD. And so there's that side of it where I understand it on a clinical level. There's a big difference between the clinical level and the experience of it.
Yeah.
In the moment, dealing with it. And the best example I have of this, because I can point out any relationship I've been in and see, you know, bits of this. But the most recent one, I started a relationship at the beginning of September with another trans woman who about, I don't know, like 9 years younger than me. She's like 33. And 34 now, I guess. But she and I got into a relationship, and there's this thing within borderline circles where we talk about the idea of an FP, which stands for favorite person. Most people who have BPD usually have one. What a favorite person is essentially, imagine somebody who just seems to hook right into your psychological background, your baggage.
Click with them.
You just click with them on a way that is, you know, sometimes can be very unhealthy. Sometimes it's not necessarily, but you click with them in a way that is incredibly intense. So all of your symptoms become more so. The issue with the person I started dating, I'm going to call her No, is almost immediately she became an FP, which was difficult because up until then, my only one had been Xena. So I suddenly went from one to two, which was something I had never experienced before.
So for people who might be a little confused right now, you guys are polyamorous.
Correct. We are polyamorous.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so the issue came down to is as the relationship progressed, I found myself torn between my two partners. But the additional problem was, is that the person in question, despite how much I had idealized them and how much of a white split I was in for all that time, I was so lost in that I didn't realize how toxic things were for me. And there were two major abusive aspects of the relationship. One of them was a sort of underlying negligence, like a level of neglect where no matter how close I got to this person, they were always at arm's distance. It always felt like there was a disconnect. Because I could never feel like I could make a solid connection, I always felt anxious, nervous, and afraid that at any moment the relationship was going to disappear. And so that's the start. Where the relationship got really problematic was she would occasionally say things that were either really inappropriate or at least inappropriate for myself, or were just flat out boundary crosses that had been discussed. The most notable one was
mean.
What's that?
Some things were just mean.
Well, no, sometimes she would get, have her own stuff and get very mean. But the biggest one that comes to mind with that situation, and this kind of leads to the larger consent discussion, is during the whole of that relationship, I didn't feel like I could leave. This is often true with people with borderline where the fear of abandonment is more powerful than the harm or toxicity you're receiving from the relationship. This is why we're much more likely to be the victims of relational abuse rather than tends to be the ones that do it.
Yeah, it sounds like it was codependent.
It was very codependent. Yeah. The two of us talked almost all the time. We were constantly on Discord together. It was a nearly all the time thing. And so, and both of us engaged in this.
Yeah, I should clarify, just to, you know, full disclosure, yeah, when mentioning this former partner's any sort of mental illness, anything like that, you are not diagnosing her. It's just sort of
I'm only going to talk about the information that I have. The only information I have is that I know what she thinks she has. She has no formal diagnoses.
There we go.
That is what I'm going off by.
Yeah.
And again, I want to be very clear is that if I state something sounds like something, that is not a diagnosis.
No.
A diagnosis is a formal process where I submit a code to insurance and then they pay me. That is what a diagnosis is. Otherwise, it's just a construct to describe a phenomenon of pathology. That's it.
Right. And that's the tricky thing too, right? Is that this is all stuff that everybody experiences to an extent. Every show I do like this, somebody emails me and says, I think I might have BPD. I think I might have OCD. I think I might. No. It's everybody feels this kind of, it's the intensity of it that becomes, I mean, it's called a disorder for a reason, correct?
Yeah. So imagine, this is a little bit of a descriptor, but think about it like this. Imagine that you have such a vague sense of self that the way you construct your sense of self is by taking bits and pieces of the people around you. Now that sounds like a great plan until one of them leaves. And when somebody disconnects or leaves or the relationship ends inevitably, what often happens is the person in question will feel as though a part of them is being ripped out. And from a very real experience perspective, it is. And so the thing is, they're left there bleeding out. And so when I talk about like the fear of abandonment, people think about that and they go, oh, well, everyone's afraid of abandonment.
Right.
It isn't to this pathological degree, and it isn't something you will avoid at all costs. And also, it isn't something that feels like the fear of death.
Right.
Like it's when abandonment brings up existential terror, that is the best way to describe it. People with borderline often struggle with boundaries because again, the fear of abandonment, if making boundaries feels like conflict, then why the hell would you ever engage in it? So because conflict can lead to abandonment. So just, again, very simple math. Long story short is Christmas comes along. We were planning on going out to visit her. She lives in a relatively nearby state to us, and it wasn't too far a drive, about 500 miles. And the day before this trip, her and I get into a fight. And the fight is about her, A, crossing a boundary again, and B, her crossing another boundary. This prompts her to end the relationship. And she then spends the day talking briefly with me, who had to quit cancel clients because I was so upset. And Zena, who was trying to work out the situation because we had already put time, money, and effort and, you know, genuine want to come out there and see her.
Well, and it came during a fight, so it's hard to tell if, like, okay, wait, what, like, is this something that you genuinely intend to stick with, or is this like,
right,
or is this just you being reactive? And so what happened was is initially, you know, my responses were, you know, the typical sort of panicked begging, though some have tried to, through screenshots, frame that as me being like coercive and abusive, when really it's just me having a panic attack. Very fun stuff. But Zena talked to, you know, throughout the day and kind of came to a realization of like, yeah, no, we should at least try to come out there and try to resolve things. And No agreed to that. That wasn't something of hers.
Okay.
You know, adult did too. This wasn't coercive. This wasn't anything. She just agreed to it. And what ended up happening was, is, you know, begrudgingly, we all kind of got together.
Mm-hmm.
We met at a hotel in her town. And this was supposed to be over Christmas weekend. We were supposed to leave Christmas Eve. And what ended up happening was, is Zena wasn't feeling well due to, you know, food issues on the road, IBS, all that stuff. And one of the times when Zena went to the bathroom, me and No ended up starting to interact sexually. That went fine. There was no issue there. Where things got dicey was the second time Zena had been asleep. I had decided I wanted to sleep with No that night. And what ended up happening was, I initiated it, at least from the beginning, and immediately it sort of escalated and became much more intense. And I realized at the time that there was something off, but I couldn't figure out what. But every time I tried to even follow that thought, it just sort of shut down. I learned in hindsight that what was going on, working with my own therapist and kind of doing my own personal work, is that what this was sort of borderline. So the relationship was hanging by a thread. Yeah. I have this person who is in the midst of being sexual with me. And not just sexual in like a typical way, but in the sense of I had had vaginoplasty in August of last year and had finally healed up enough where this was the first time that I could actually be physically intimate with a partner in that way. That was something I wanted to give to know. So you have not only...
That's intense.
She
knew all of this beforehand.
Yeah. This was all stuff that was very clear to her. Like, this was
all
a new
talked about and everything.
Yeah. Huge conversation about this. But like, there is a way in which like she knew all of this ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So this was an incredibly meaningful thing that I kind of tried to force myself to go through. And because my hope at the time was one, you know, that by doing this would make her stay.
Yeah.
And two, seeing the specialness of it might hopefully get her to acknowledge her feelings, because it seemed like she still had them during the act. She said, I love you several times. And so what ends up happening is, you know, that ends. And the next morning, there was a misunderstanding about something. There was a bit of an argument with myself and Zena. And Zena made the decision that they wanted to fly home that day. They said, you know what? It seems like you two have some stuff to work out. And I should go back home. I can stay with people who want me there and I can spend Christmas with. And as much as I didn't like it, I was willing to make it happen. Just because I figured that way I could focus on no and figure out what the hell's going on. No took this as an opportunity to decide to say fuck it. And she ended up saying she was leaving. She wasn't coming back. And this proceeded in me, of course, having a breakdown on the ground, knees crying the whole nine yards.
Well, yeah.
Not my proudest moment, but...
But if this was a man and a cisgender woman,
yeah,
nobody would question that reaction.
No one, yeah, not even the slightest. But two trans women, it's. So the issue I got into was for some reason after No left, eventually she did leave. Yeah. And once she did, I started feeling really nauseous and really awful. And I couldn't put my finger onto why, but it was so bad that we ended up deciding to drive home that night. So we had to pay for an extra night being there because we hadn't gotten out in time, but we got our other night refunded. Fine, whatever. So we drove home that night in the middle of the night from a nearby state. And what ends up happening is we drive 500 miles back in the middle of the damn night. We get back. And I am already starting to show trauma reactions. I am having a hard time in my own bedroom. The lighting and the size of it makes me claustrophobic. I end up having to sleep with the doors open and keeping the lights on. And I feel nauseous. I feel gross. I can't seem to make myself feel clean or better. And the whole time I just feel really awful, but I can't put my finger onto why.
Okay.
I reached out to No to figure out what was going on. And one of the things that happened was there was a discussion about what happened between us. And what she said in that conversation, I'll just read it because it's a little bit easier. I kind of called her out and said, like, you lied to me. Like, you told me that you wanted to be with me physically because you loved me and cared about me. And then told me the next day that you didn't love me and that this was all just a litmus test to see if you still cared.
Well,
the big intention of us even going on this trip was, okay, you know, we'll be in person, we'll be able to kind of see and read each other's faces a lot better. You know, so it kind of cuts out some of like the projection that can happen with online stuff. And also, but, like, there really was the intention to work on things. Like, that was the, we are showing up with an intention to, that stuff will get worked on. Like,
so you guys had not met in person before this?
Nope. Everything was online. Our dates were usually over video. I spent a tremendous amount of time with this person. Just to give you an insight, I downloaded, there's things you can get where you can download every message you've ever done over Facebook.
Yeah.
Not Facebook, excuse me, Discord. My total messages with her from the middle of August when I had my vaginoplasty to the last day we talked, which was December 27th, was 63,108 messages.
Wow.
Basically, every day I'd get up for work and in between clients, I would be talking to her until she went to sleep around 3 because she worked midnight. And then we talked during the night while she was working and just happened to work out that way.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is the point where a lot of people will get kind of trying to make your decisions for you. I know you've had people tell you, well, just, you know, cut out the poly, just don't do it, all that stuff.
Oh, I lost a job over it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think we have time to get into that.
No, no, that's a whole separate story. But yeah, no, it's.
I want you to put on your therapist hat for a minute, sure. if it's possible. I know this is super personal. And what's wrong with telling someone how to live their life in a situation like this?
I mean, honestly, the big issue is that it's invalidating as hell.
Right.
It also feels like a weird deflection. So in the case of the people who are like, well, I don't think you should be poly, what they're ignoring in those situations is my relationship with Xena, my relationship mm-hmm. with my other partner, Sage, where sure, there's issues, but there's nothing like this. The reason why this relationship was so explosive with No was that it was abusive. It was toxic. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't see it. There's a really great line from BoJack Horseman, which is, you know, if you're wearing rose-colored glasses, all the red flags look like flags.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. a white split in a nutshell.
Yeah, and that's the issue is, you know, I guess once you're in a long-term relationship with Xena, with Sage, who is lovely, both mm-hmm. inside and out, that's safe when mm-hmm. you're meeting new people. I mean, this is all very, very complicated. And what's interesting about your particular story is a lot of people would be like, I can't, I couldn't, I, you know, but this has worked for you. It sounds like up until this point, you haven't had an experience.
The big thing for abuse that I always want to remind mm-hmm. people is that anyone can get into an abusive relationship. It doesn't matter if you're a clinician.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you, you know, work with this stuff and you go in and out. It doesn't matter. Anyone can get into an abusive relationship with anyone. It could be a friendship. It could be, you know, a longer term relationship, anything.
So
these are dynamics that just creep in over time. That just happen immediately, usually.
Yeah. Right. You know, I didn't know some of these details until now. So I'm sitting here going, oh, it's worse than I thought. In hindsight, to help other people, when was the abuse? When did you know in hindsight? Yeah, that was the point that it became abusive.
I think I figured out it was abusive with No probably within a day or two. I think that was something you and I had been talking about the whole way back and just everything and going over it. And I think that was something we came to pretty quickly. So the thing I was going to bring up a little bit earlier was that I had a message from her. I told her how gross I felt, how much she had kind of tainted these experiences for me. And her response was as follows. It's, I lied about the sex stuff. I'm truly sorry for doing so. You were initiating in my mind. I did still have feelings. In my mind, I still had feelings for you. I wanted to make you happy. I'm not blaming you for the record. I genuinely cared and wanted to make you feel amazing during that. The next day, my head started to clear. ZZ wanted to leave. Myself having time to think and see how I was reacting to you and the issues coming back up. I realized my feelings weren't there anymore. I had a lot of thoughts of why am I even bothering? This was a mistake. I tried to force myself to still love you, but I couldn't. I'm so, so sorry, Poppy. I don't know how to make things better, even just to be friends. I don't know how I could possibly make up for the shit I put you through. And the reason I wanted to share that is that this was 5 hours before my friend and editor for our channel, Penelope, told me that I was assaulted. When I told her what happened, she goes, you were sexually assaulted. And it took me a good couple hours to come to the realization of that being the case, because I also have biases. I also have things and I didn't at the time, but it started to click into place as to why I felt so gross and why things felt so off. And I went back and read this and I realized it reads exactly similar to those Reddit forums where they're like, hey, someone who's committed sexually assault accidentally, what is your story? It literally reads like one of those posts where the person's intentions were irrelevant because what they did was coercive and still a non-consensual act.
Even if it was not, that's basically a how not to break up with someone with borderline.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And again, in this case it is, because as I've pointed out, there's two things going on here. This is a partner who I had informed through dozens of articles, through mm-hmm. several talks.
I think that's the hardest part is that our story is almost a cautionary tale too.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the problem is like, you can warn someone, you can tell someone, you can give everyone you know, give someone every ounce of data and they can't come to the conclusions they need to, because if she had just stopped and thought for 5 seconds and went, oh, having the relationship dangling there like a carrot on a stick means that there is no way that Poppy can make a decision because she's so focused on, you know, the carrot, that this becomes an issue of where, this is why I felt so gross afterwards, even before she left, because something felt off to me about that situation. And then when she left and I found out that even the care she expressed during.
Yeah, was, in her words, a lie.
Yeah, her saying like, yeah, I don't love you anymore, and going, but wait, this, so what was last night? Was it just like a litmus test? Like, that's the whole reason you were here, is to see if you still like, and she said, yes, that was the case. So like, the issue is that like, it becomes a problem of like, now we have two issues. There's the consent issue because of mental illness.
Right.
And there's the sexual assault via deception.
And then there's the abusive breakup based on what not to do with somebody with borderline.
Oh, I've literally said that the getting out of this relationship, I still struggle with. I think I've talked to you about this in DM.
Yeah, I've talked to several people.
And like, one of the things that I can only do is I keep thinking of the line from I can only keep thinking of the song by Nine Inch Nails, The Perfect Drug.
Yeah.
I just keep thinking about that because that's what this feels like. It feels like withdrawal. It feels like I've never had a relationship where I like thought I was in rehab. Like, and it just has that vibe.
Now, Zena, you're watching this all go down. You're trying to support Poppy through all this. Did you have a sense something was really wrong and you didn't know what to do? What was going on? Because I mean, you're involved. You're harmed by this too.
No, this shows some of the roughest stuff, because like, I remember talking to Poppy like the night before it happened. You know, like, I was still sick in the bathroom, but like, she looked super intense and I don't know the best word for it, but like, manic almost comes to mind. Like, that feeling of just like, she felt like she had to like keep going and keep being like there with no, and keep figuring things, like keep trying. And even before all of this, like, there was a lot of situations that were going south. You know, and so for a while, like, the best thing that I had was just support Poppy and just hold on to her when, you know, was wonky, or just be there for her when things were okay.
So were you kind of frozen by watching it kind of decay in slow motion?
Yeah. I guess I felt frozen a lot of times. A lot of it was also enraging, but a lot of that I just kind of had to put aside. Because again, Poppy's still in all of this. Like, she's still in, like, at the time, she was still in the middle of it.
So in your opinion, she was too far in to reason with?
Yeah.
Well, that's a sign that consent couldn't be given right there, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. Like, there were...
Poppy, you okay?
Yeah, okay. Just listening and thinking. I'm trying to think if there's anything else to add. Yeah.
Well, I want to land in a good place because you guys are still together. So when we come back at our final segment, I'm going to keep Poppy and Zena here. If you have questions, comments, concerns, Leanna at nottherapyshow.com. Nottherapyshow.com is the website. Fill out the contact form. But when we come back, I want briefly, because we don't have a ton of time, Poppy, Zena, what got you through this? What relationship advice can you give when we come back on It's Not Therapy?
The following program is a peer-to-peer advice show and does not diagnose mental health conditions. If you're seeking social services, please call or text 211 or go to 211.ca.
We're back and It's Not Therapy. I'm still Leanna Kirstner. I'm still not a therapist. I'm still talking to Poppy and Zena. Poppy is a therapist, and we're talking about mental health and consent. Poppy was in a situation because of her borderline personality disorder where she was not able to freely and from an informed place give consent. And Zena had to hang on for the ride. How do you make this very, very complicated set of circumstances? How do you make this work? You've been together how long now?
It's going to be, 7 years in May? Yeah.
Yeah. How do you make this work?
We just keep trying day by day. Like, that's the biggest thing, is like, at the beginning of the relationship, Poppy got into therapy real fast. So did I. And she actually got that was actually when she got the diagnosis for BPD. We did a lot of work then, and that's been saving our butts now lately. You know, like, and we both deal with flashbacks. Sometimes our flashbacks will crisscross and, like, exasperate those flashbacks. And, like, afterwards, we tend to just let that stuff go and just hug it out afterwards.
Okay.
One of the big practices, too, that we started around that time was that we go over, you know, the flashback or the panic attack or whatever a little bit and just kind of restate anything that we need to. So, like, if you said something, like, kind of awful or that, like, no, you really don't mean, we would re-say that to, we would re-say whatever it is that we actually mean to our, to each other.
To you know, rewrite the memory of it.
Yes. Yep. So that way you still have a memory of them saying, you know, the positive thing. You still have said it all over again. I mean, yeah, in all honesty, Poppy and I are still really, I still have trouble sleeping. Poppy still has trouble sleeping. Like, this stuff's really rough.
I think the thing I'd add to that real quick, what's easy saying is, like, I think the thing for me is, like, I'll be honest, like, some of our fights, especially early on in the relationship with Noe, were some of the worst fights we've had.
That's, yeah.
And the whole time, you know, Xena's basically just strapped into the ride. They can't do anything. They can't really, you know, do much because, you know, they can push on me all they want and say, you know, this person's a problem. I don't want them around. I don't want this. But Xena figured out really early on that none of that works. All it does is make me dig my heels in. Yep. So we had to figure out a new way to engage with it. As far as, like, the long-term stuff, I think the big thing is aftercare after fights.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, making sure that, like, no matter how knockdown, drag out the fight gets, like, you care for the other person, you try to make amends, you try to hold to the things you care about, obviously. You don't just cave, but you make amends for any harms. I mean, a good part of this is, like, having your own, like, rules for fights. Like, what is allowed, what isn't.
I love that, saying the positive thing actively after something hurtful is said instead of just saying I didn't mean it. So you guys are content creators, so plug your stuff. People can check you out.
Sure. You can find us on YouTube at Xena and Poppy. We go by Xena and Poppy, Wholesome Degenerates, and we talk about everything from mental illness, mental health, to trans rights, to just politics in general. But yeah, we've been off for a couple months. We're going to be starting back up again soon.
Right.
You can also follow us on Twitter at Xena and Poppy. So that should be solid.
That's, as we say in Canada, Z-E-N-A and Poppy. Z-E-N-A, down where y'all are.
I agree with the Canadian. It's one less thing to get used over the phone.
Yeah. Xena, Poppy, thank you so much. Xena, I apologize if I accidentally misgendered you at any point in this interview. I missed they, them. Questions, comments, concerns, Leanna at NotTherapyShow.com, or fill out the contact form, join our mailing list on NotTherapyShow.com. I'm NotTherapyShow on X, as Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. Really short on time. Remember, your crazy is only a problem if it's hurting someone else or you. Get consent. Talk next time.